One.
Hello, and welcome to the ISS Bulletin June podcast for the Americas region. I'm Renata Schmidt, head of Latin America research. And with me today to review some highlights of the 2019 Latin America proxy season are three members of our research team, Ana Luisa Farias, John Reedy, and Matt Schaefer. During today's podcast, we will focus on six of the largest countries in the region, including Mexico, Chile, Argentina, Colombia, Peru, and of course, Brazil, which as the most active market accounts for more than 55% of the covered meetings. Between January and April 2019, our team covered a total of 812 Latin America shareholder meetings. The proxy season for Latin American companies remains heavily concentrated, with 60% of all meetings taking place during the month of April. Of the 2019 meetings reviewed, roughly 70% were annual meetings and 30% were special meetings. Now let's start the conversation with board elections in the region. Starting with the Spanish-speaking countries in our region, John, what are the biggest challenges that shareholders continue to face when voting on directors?
The biggest issue in many of our markets remains knowing who will be on ballot. The lack of timely disclosure of meeting materials, including the names of proposed board nominees, continues to be a major challenge for global investors in the Spanish-speaking markets in the region. Most issuers in these countries, which includes the second largest regional market, Mexico, as well as Chile, Argentina, Colombia, and Peru, still do not provide timely disclosure of their meeting materials. These poor disclosure practices continue to be the main driver of negative vote recommendations.
And did we see any improvement in disclosures and timeliness during the 2019 proxy season?
Yes, we did. So every year we note marginal increases in the number of issuers that disclose board nominees. Colombia continues to be the strongest performer in terms of timely disclosure of board nominees among the Spanish-speaking countries covered in the region. One-third of all Colombian issuers and one-half of the most widely held companies in the market are now providing timely disclosure of board nominees. Additionally, Peru was the most improved market in 2019. However, as four of the 17 issuers with board elections disclosed their proposed nominees prior to ISS issuing its vote recommendations. Notably, only one of those 17 issuers had disclosed the proposed board nominees in its prior board election.
And going back to Colombia, why do you think Colombia continues to outpace its Spanish-speaking market peers in the region with respect to timely disclosure?
So the Colombian market's improvements in transparency appear to be linked to the country's recent membership in the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Colombia was accepted as a full member of the OECD in May 2018, and we have seen ongoing improvement in the country's disclosure practices as it has taken steps to become a full OECD member.
Interesting. So in 2019, ISS implemented a new board tenure policy for the Latin America region, under which directors serving for 12 years or more would be classified as non-independent. We knew from the beginning that Mexico would be heavily impacted by this new tenure policy due to the market's large number of long tenure directors. John, can you tell us a little bit about the impact of this policy change during the 2019 proxy season?
Sure. Several markets in the region had already implemented either hard or soft laws that linked board independence to tenure. We incorporated these market developments into our guidelines to reflect the wider acceptance of the importance of considering tenure to encourage board refreshment and to strengthen board independence in the region. Renata, as you noted, Mexico was heavily impacted. A total of 28% of directors who were classified by their companies as independent were reclassified by ISS as non-independent due to excessive tenure. In contrast, in the largest market, Brazil, only around 5% of directors classified as independent by companies had tenures of 12 years or longer.
And talking about vote recommendations, how did the updated tenure policy effectively impact the ISS vote recommendations for board elections in the region?
So although a large number of directors of Mexican issuers were reclassified as non-independent under ISS policy, the updated policy did not have a significant impact on vote recommendations. This is because the key vote rec driver for elections in the Mexican market continues to be the lack of timely disclosure of board nominees, which prevents shareholders from making an informed voting decision regarding the proposed board and its overall independence.
Thanks, John. Now, continuing with board elections, let's examine the largest Latin America market, Brazil, a market that has seen a great number of regulatory changes in the past few years due to the adoption of the remote voting card system. 2019 was the second year of mandatory use of the remote voting system by all publicly traded Brazilian companies. Matt, what did we see in terms of board election in the context of the adoption of the remote voting card in Brazil during the 2019 proxy season?
Renata, as you noted, 2019 was the second proxy season with the universal use of the remote voting card system by Brazilian companies. The new ballot system is intended to help shareholders exercise legal rights guaranteed to them under Brazilian corporate law. Brazil remains a market that is dominated by companies with controlling shareholders, so most of the activity has been focused on the election of board representatives by minority shareholders who seek to increase board independence and improve oversight and governance practices. In Brazil, there are multiple election formats, including separate elections for minority, ordinary, and preferred shareholders, and cumulative voting, all of which can be requested via the remote voting card. For many companies, the final election format or formats will only be known at the time of the meeting. This creates a significant challenge for investors who are not physically present at the meeting. Some stakeholders in the market, for example, had expected that the remote voting card would trigger increased adoption of cumulative voting at shareholder meetings. However, this does not appear to have been the case in the 2019 proxy season.
So why are you saying that the overall number of cumulative voting requests do not appear to have increased for 2019? Were there any noteworthy cases where such voting system applied?
Yes, there was. The mining company Vale is a good example. It was the most high-profile shareholder meeting in Brazil for 2019 due to the mining dam collapse in the early part of this year that killed close to 300 people. It was the second such accident in a little over 3 years. Vale's board election was carried out under cumulative voting, apparently for the first time. Minority shareholders presented a board nominee to be elected exclusively under the cumulative voting process, which was implemented via the remote voting card. As a result, minority shareholders were able to concentrate their votes on specific nominees, and they elected the minority board candidate. As a result of the election, one member of the management slate was unseated. The overall board independence was increased to 23% from 16%, and a third female director was added to the board.
And Anna, are there any other changes that we could consider directly related to the adoption of the remote voting card in Brazil?
Yes, a material change that we noted in the market first in 2018 and now in 2019 is the increase in unbundled board elections. Although slate elections remain market practice, a growing number of companies, I would say at least a third, have presented their board nominees for individual votes. This appears to be a positive byproduct of the way the agendas are presented on the remote voting card.
We also have seen more companies install fiscal counsel because minority shareholders requested it through the remote voting card. It also appears that shareholder participation has increased due to the adoption of the remote voting system. According to data disclosed by the São Paulo Stock Exchange, in 2016, the average shareholder quorum of the 94 most liquid companies in the market was 71%. In 2018, the average quorum was up to 78% for the same group of companies. The data for 2019 has not been released by the stock exchange yet, however.
Thank you, Anna and Matt. Now, John, moving next to the topics of shareholder activism and engagement, Chilean company Enel Americas, the former Enersi, faced some shareholder concerns due to a capitalization proposal this year. What happened with the most recent proposal presented during the 2019 proxy season?
So the Chilean-based energy company proposed a $3.5 billion capitalization in order to repay an intercompany loan and to restructure pension obligations, both of which were related to the company's acquisition of Brazilian energy distribution company Eletropaulo. Announcement of the proposal drew an instant negative market reaction, and the company's share price fell over 10% on the announcement date. In addition, the most active minority shareholders in Chile, the Chilean pension funds, also known as AFPs, publicly raised concerns regarding the size of the issuance in local media outlets.
So did the company change the proposed capitalization amount or give any indication that it had responded to shareholders' concerns?
So from the original announcement in late February until the disclosure of the meeting materials in early April, Enel Américas maintained the size and scope of the proposal. 5 days prior to the meeting, however, the board of directors unanimously decided to lower the proposed amount from $3.5 billion to $3 billion. It appears that the board considered, at least in part, the concerns raised by many of its shareholders. At the meeting itself, which was held on April 30th, several AFPs requested to vote on a lower proposal of $2.6 billion. However, the company's representative denied this request, stating that shareholders could not vote consecutively on similar proposals. Ultimately, the $3 billion proposal, which required two-thirds support, was approved by around 72% of the company's outstanding shares. Considering the affirmative vote from the company's controlling shareholder, Italian-based Enel, who holds 56% of outstanding shares, the proposal appears to have garnered less than a majority of the minority shareholder vote.
Thanks, John. Now let's shift the conversation to another hot governance topic in Latin America, namely compensation. And the focus now is Brazil, where companies are required to present a binding global remuneration proposal. Ana, were there any material changes in remuneration proposals for Brazilian companies during the 2019 proxy season?
Definitely. This year we saw a significant improvement in the disclosure of remuneration information. 2019 marks the first year when nearly all companies disclosed the total remuneration of the highest paid executives. This proxy season, all but four companies covered by ISS disclosed this data point. Last year, 47 or more than 25% of the companies covered by ISS in Brazil did not provide this information.
So some good news on that front. And what was the driver for the improved remuneration disclosures across the market?
Although the Brazilian securities regulator requires the disclosure of the highest paid executive compensation, until last year, about a quarter of the companies used a legal loophole to avoid this specific disclosure. A legal injunction, which was granted to the Rio chapter of the Brazilian Institute of Financial Executives, known as IBEF, was suspended by the Brazilian court soon after the 2018 proxy season. The regulator immediately ordered companies that had cited the injunction to disclose the highest and average executive and board remuneration for 2015, 16, and 17. The companies complied, and almost all issuers continued to provide information this proxy season. This transparency led ISS to recommend support for more annual remuneration proposals in Brazil when shareholders are asked to approve a compensation cap for the company's administrators. While in 2018, ISS recommended support for a little over one-third of the proposals, in 2019, half of the companies received favorable recommendations.
So you mentioned half of the companies. 50% support of remuneration proposals continues to be a somewhat low level of recommended support compared to other annual agendas, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Although we can safely say that the suspension of the IBEF injunction was an important development, transparency is still a problem when it comes to executive remuneration in Brazil. When we look a little closer at the figures, we frequently see that they are not consistent. It's not uncommon, for example, for companies to leave some remuneration components out of the figure disclosed as the highest executive pay.
Yes, the numbers confirm that the suspension of the IBEF injunction led to a material improvement in the disclosure practices in Brazil. So can we consider this issue settled?
Not yet. The litigation continues, and the IBEF injunction was in fact reinstated after the 2019 proxy season. Key stakeholders, such as the Brazilian Corporate Governance Institute, have already stated that the reversal of this disclosure would not represent good governance practice. Considering that almost all Brazilian issuers have already disclosed their highest executive remuneration for the most recent fiscal years, we believe that there are few good arguments for any company to return to the old practice. This would be a material step back from the best recommended practices in the market, but we'll have to wait and see.
Agreed. Now, Ana, were there any other noteworthy changes in terms of equity compensation or remuneration proposals for Brazilian companies?
Yes, we have seen increased diversification in equity compensations in Brazil, although the numbers are relatively small. In 2019, through the end of proxy season, ISS analyzed 29 equity compensation proposals, compared to only 17 in the same period of 2017. Stock options plans were by far the most popular type of plan until a few years ago. In 2019, when the 29 proposals analyzed by ISS encompassed 31 plans, only 9 of them were stock option plans. The most common plans these days are the restricted share plans, representing almost 50% of all proposals this year. We are also seeing an increase in the adoption of share matching plans. There were 5 of them in 2019 so far, or 1 in each 6 of the plans analyzed by ISS.
So you mentioned restricted shares and share matching plans. Are there any problematic features with these diversified equity compensation plans that we have seen in the market?
Yes, there are some common features that can weaken the desired alignment of beneficiaries and shareholders' interests. The most relevant ones are the overlap between the plan's administrators and beneficiaries, and the lack of clearly stated performance criteria, information that is still very rarely disclosed in the market.
Thanks, Anna. Now, to finish up our conversation today, let's take a quick look at a new type of proposal that has become more prevalent in Brazil in the context of the widespread corruption investigation known as Operation Car Wash. Started with the state-controlled oil giant Petrobras in 2014, which has uncovered corruption practices implicating a large number of companies, administrators, and politicians in Brazil and even throughout the Latin America region. In the aftermath of such investigations, there have been material increases in the cost of the directors and officers' liability insurances, the so-called D&O insurances. As D&O insurance premiums increase, more companies are seeking shareholder support to create indemnification provisions for its administrators. So, Matt, what are the most recent developments we have seen in the Brazilian market regarding such indemnification proposals?
We've seen significant changes since September 2018, when the Brazilian securities regulator issued Guidance Opinion 38, providing recommended practices for adoption of indemnity contracts. Since then, at least 7 companies have requested shareholder approval of indemnification-related proposals. They include some of the largest companies in the market, such as Petrobras, Embraer, and B3. Although most of the companies have largely followed the language of the regulator's guidance opinion, as of now, none of them appear to have adopted all of the recommended practices. And maybe the most surprising development in terms of indemnification coverage was the proposal presented by public concession operating company, CCR. After being sanctioned for corruption practices, the company sought approval not only to offer indemnification coverage to former administrators who allegedly admitted to the corruption practices, but CCR also proposed to pay these same former administrators for the next 5 years as an incentive for them to continue to cooperate with the investigations carried out by the public prosecutor's office in Brazil. While this was one of the worst governance practices that we've seen in the market, the proposal was approved thanks almost exclusively to the votes of the controlling shareholders.
Yes, we see some room for improvement there. Well, that's it for our 2019 Latin America Proxy Season Review podcast. Thanks, Ana Luisa Farias, John Reedy, and Matt Schaefer. And thanks to you, our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. Watch your email for the next installment and send any feedback or questions to the following email, bulletin@issgovernance.com. Again, the email is bulletin@issgovernance.com. Goodbye for now.